Now, it seems very strange to be talking about the Czech writer Hana Andronikova in the past tense. When she died of cancer on December 20th last year, she was only 44, and until the last month of her life, had been at the height of her creative powers. The author of two successful novels, several plays, and numerous short stories, she was one of the most versatile younger Czech writers and will be hugely missed. David Vaughan looks at her life and work.
By a sad irony, Hana Andronikova died just 2 days after Václav Havel, and in the whirlwind that followed Havel's death, many Czech papers devoted only a few lines to her life and work. But the Czech literary scene has lost one of its most gifted writers. Hana's epic novel, Sound of the Sundial, first published in 2001, is one of the most important books to appear in the Czech Republic since the fall of communism. In recent years, Hana Andronikova had worked closely with the Archa Theatre in Prague, and I spoke to the theatre's director, Ondřej Hrab, about her legacy.
For those who met her for the first time, she looked like a tiny, fragile girl. But for us who knew her for a longer time, we knew that she was a strong personality. And she always was heading to her goals. She was also very much versatile in her activities.
And also in her writing style. In fact, she wrote in many different styles, different genres, didn't she?
Yes. Actually, she always used the style of her writing according to the topic, what she was writing. From this point of view, she really was using her richness of the language she knew. But she was also good not only in Czech, but also in English.
And before we talk in a little bit more detail about her writing, I think that one thing that is interesting and very relevant to Hana Andronikova's writing and life is the fact that she wasn't a Prague writer. She came from Moravia, from the city of Zlín, which is a very interesting place in its own right and very different, I think, from Prague.
It's a quite small city, but probably the only really cosmopolitan city in Czech Republic. There was a company, Bata Company, and in the 20s, Bata decided to transform this almost like a village or very small town into industrial metropolis. So you can find really modern architecture there. You can find people who live there or the descendants of people who were Bata Company's managers who lived for a while in India or in other countries. So this small town was really connected to the world since the beginning of the last century.
And what's also very interesting is that Hana's best-known novel, Zvuk slunečních hodin, or The Sound of the Sundial, it is in part about Zlín and about the shoemaking industry, and in fact the family that figures most prominently in the book, they do go off to India, don't they, to work for Batya, for the shoe company in Calcutta.
Yes, but not only this. Hana's grandfather was a painter. He was drawing illustrations for the well-known travel books of Hanzelka and Zygmunt. And Hana's grandfather brought the world to their house, and Hana was living with the drawings of Bushmen from South Africa, with drawings of Indians from Latin America. So that was her virtual world already from her childhood.
Back in 2003, Hana Andronikova came into the Radio Prague studio to talk about Sound of the Sundial and read some extracts.
The whole book is narrated by two people, Daniel Kepler and Anne Vanier. And these two people have a dialogue during one night, and they discover, I mean, they slowly reveal the whole story of Daniel Kepler's family. And I'm going to read a part that takes us to 30s. This part is narrated by little Daniel when he's a boy. His father, Thomas Kepler, comes back to Czechoslovakia to take his wife and his little son to India, where he's working on the construction of the Bhatia shoe factory. And, of course, Thomas Kepler is quite enthusiastic about India, and he's hoping that his wife is going to like it there. So this is the part. She didn't like it in India at all. She saw the dirt, the mouldering walls of the houses, litter floating in the sludge. It made her feel sick, the putrid stench wafting towards her, the dozens of curs and cats running around, hairless and mangy. She went into fits when she saw crippled children lying in the dust of the street, beggars with hands stretched out. She suffered from phobias about dirt and disease. She couldn't bear the naked face of reality, the raw shape of misery, sickness and dying. The day she saw her first snake, she wanted to go home. Mother India, land of an ancient culture, mysterious and inscrutable, broad rivers of rolling yellowy-grey water, silent and everlasting. India.
That was Hanna Andronikova reading an extract from Sound of the Sundial. Hanna had an unusual beginning to her literary career. Andrei Hrab again.
First, she was in business. She was really a businesswoman in this first wave of entrepreneurship after the revolution. She was very young. She was very well-educated. She spoke perfect English. And she, in a very short time, raised to the top management of international and also Czech big companies. And at a certain moment, she decided that she would go a different way, that she would write a book. She stopped the job. She closed herself for 2 years into her room, and she wrote a novel. And when she finished the novel and opened the door of her working room, she realized that the world of business is not for her, that she has totally different values. Writing totally changed her life. She decided to be a writer, and also it influenced her personal life because she divorced her husband and she started to travel and started to live her independent artistic life.
Here is Hanna Andronikova again talking about Sound of the Sundial back in 2003. Pavla Yonsonova asked her about her very distinctive writing style, and Hanna gave an answer that reminds us of two of the strengths that pervade her work. Firstly, her ability to tell a story through the characters to whom the story belongs, and secondly, her rare gift of combining an internal, even confessional narrative with an ability to step outside the story. To this we should add her strong feeling for the musicality of language.
I just wanted to the story flow in the most natural manner, and I think when two people talk, they make pauses. It doesn't really fit. Sometimes it's not chronological. They have, you know, like different sorts of telling the story. Both of them, of these narrators of the story, they both know the same people, but from different angles, and that also gives you a very interesting point of view.
It seems to me that the voice of a young boy is very strong in your writing, that these are like one of the strongest parts of your novel.
I think it's just the luck of people with good memory that I just somehow do remember my childhood and lots of things, you know, so you can build on that. Some people tend to forget, or maybe their childhood were not really something nice, something they want to remember. My childhood was very nice, and I can build on that very much. When Mama first allowed me to go with Sam to the fish market, I was in raptures. I ran here and there in the stifling Babylonian odor and chatter, poking my nose into baskets full of florid shrimps, catfish and sardines. Sam offered to let me choose to point out which fish I wanted, but that was a superhuman task. I couldn't decide. I pointed to the right and to the left and somewhere else again. I wanted them all. In the end, I did choose. It was a gold-colored fish, topshay. The English call it mango fish, but for me it was a golden fish and I didn't want any other. When I got back, all I could think of was that we would have my golden fish for dinner. I wanted to play with it. I wanted to take it to bed with my teddy bear. Mama got angry. You can't take a dead fish to bed. It is not dead, it's mine. I chose it. Listen to me. I know you chose it, but that fish is not for playing with. If you like, we'll get you an aquarium for your birthday, and you can put another golden fish in there and look after it, all right? And why can't we have this fish in the aquarium? Because it's dead, and dead fish don't swim. They have to be eaten as soon as possible. She lost her patience. If you can't be sensible, I'm not going to allow you to go to the market next time. I lost my patience as well. I don't care. In the evening, I cried in my room while my parents ate my golden fish. I had fought in vain, and what was more, I was afraid my mother would never let me visit the fish market again. I sneaked into the dining room and watched them eating it all up. Papa noticed me. He put his knife down and waved to me to come in. "Do you want to taste the golden fish?" he set me on his knee. He never got angry. I looked at Mama out of the corner of my eye, and she was smiling. That gave me courage. "And when will I get the aquarium?" They looked at each other over my head and burst out laughing.
Hannah's writing then took her to other parts of the world, didn't it?
Yes. It was not only that foreign countries were interesting her. It was more that people from different parts of the world had different faiths, and that was for her interesting. That's why when we invited her for collaboration with our theater, when Jana Svobodová, the director, invited her to work on the projects with immigrants and refugees, she joined the project with great effort, and she collected the stories of refugees from the refugee camps, and they together created a show which was called A Dance Through the Fence, which showed five different faiths of immigrants who were seeking their new home in Czech Republic. It was, again, totally different work from her previous books.
And also it's something that's very difficult, isn't it, for a writer, especially an established writer such as Hanna Andronikova, to do, to, in a way, put their own ego in the background and to work with people to try and tell their stories or to help them tell their stories. And it also takes a great deal of empathy, doesn't it?
Yes, absolutely. I think this is something what only few writers know. Usually you have the writer who gives you the text and say, no change. In this case, it was perpetual changing.
And Hannah's last novel, which last year won the Reader's Prize in the Magnesia Litera Awards, went in a very different direction. It was a novel that was in many ways autobiographical, telling the very difficult story of a woman's coming to terms with cancer, with having cancer, and traveling to Latin America, to the Peruvian jungle, to stay with a shaman, and then eventually coming back to Europe to face conventional medical treatment.
This was really a hard time for her, because out of blue, she went to the doctor and she realized that she suffers with breast cancer. She was not prepared, and she decided to go to Peru not to find a healing for herself. She told us that if she was to die, it's nice to die there. So she was ready for everything. It was not that she believed that this alternative method would help her. It was more that this being together with nature, with some kind of old wisdom, would help her to be ready for everything. You could read the second novel almost like a mystical literature, but at the same time, Hannah was able to look at herself with distance and with a very particular humor. She wrote really parts which you had to laugh, even if it was at the same time the story about the fight with the death. You could not help and you were laughing.
The strong thing to do would be to head out into the jungle, following the trail to the rapids, then on to the cold waterfalls, and there to shout out loud. Instead, she just lies and beseeches, Lord have mercy, Kyrie eleison, Christ have mercy, Jesus Christ. Calm down, girl, fear is corrosive. Before long it eats you up. So up you get. Machete, hat, water, vamos.
So she came back from jungle, from the treatment which actually didn't heal her body, but probably prepared her soul. And she got a classical medical treatment, and surprisingly it looked like there is a hope. But this hope was only for another 10 months, and then it started again.
And I think one of the things that's most tragic about Hanna Andronikova's early death is the fact that she was such a gifted writer who was so obviously developing so much as a writer from book to book.
This is a big question, because she died so young that you can't say what kind of book she would write next. So we were, of course, planning another theater project, and I know that she was planning also to write a new novel. This time she was thinking to write it directly in English. She was really gifted writer, even in English. She got a scholarship to Iowa for this international writer's residency, and there she wrote some nice short stories in English.
You recently wrote an article in the newspaper Lidové noviny about Hanna Andronikova, and I found it very moving the way that you ended that article.
I was thinking what kind of story her own life is, that this is the story for another novel, that maybe someone would find the courage to write a novel which maybe will have a very simple title, Hanna Andronikova.
Ondřej Hrab was talking about the writer Hanna Andronikova, who died on December the 20th.
Czech Books with David Vaughan. They're looking back at the life and work of the Czech writer Hanna Andronikova. And if you'd like to comment on the program so far, please do so by writing to us here at the station. The address to write to is english@radio.cz.